Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is singer-songwriter Sean Barna. Several of Barna's past releases, including Sissy, An Evening at Macri Park, and Margaret Thatcher of the Lower East Side, have received broad critical acclaim and earned him comparisons to Leonard Cohen, Harry Nilsson, and Rufus Wainwright. His most recent effort is the 2024 EP, Internal Trembling. Barna spoke with me about the peaceful nature of Colorado, being a sensitive person, and what he requires from his collaborators. That's Sean Barna on Into Music, coming up now. So where's home for you?
Right now I'm actually at my dad's house in Connecticut. I'm from Connecticut, but I'm currently living in rural western Colorado, about a 40-minute drive to the first stoplight. But it's kind of like between there and Brooklyn. But I was in Nashville last year to finish another recording project that I've been doing. Then like last year I was in Nashville a lot, and I spent all of April in Brooklyn because I had a residency, and then I was in Austin for most of March for South by Southwest and hang out with my friends, and then I moved to Colorado. So I've been all around, but I'm in Western Colorado right now, and I moved there 15 years ago, about 5 years after my brother had passed away. My little brother, he got hit by a car, and it's being in the mountains and being in something so beautiful, really. It kind of forces you to see beauty. Nature will do that to you. It's physiological to us as well. Even hearing birds and such, humans react to that. And it just forced me to relax for a while. And it was just this beautiful place. And so songs like Lake City or Jackrabbit Hill from the EP, that those places are real places in this part of Colorado I lived in. And inspiring of the sound kind of. And then and I had been reflecting on those subjects for a while, because I think, like, as a songwriter, you could stand next to a mountain and try to describe it and sound really cliche and ridiculous pretty quickly. But it's like, oh, that's a beautiful mountain, it's snow-capped mountain vibrating my heart or something. You know, you could just sound bad. But what's it really mean to sit there and live with yourself and grieve with under the watchful beauty of these natural features? And that's kind of where it started. But the newest song, it's the newest song I've written, actually, Firefly, is more, it's about a very devastating heartbreak I experienced last year. So that's more urgent at this point.
I don't know Connecticut really well, but I assume that there's a fair amount of nature there.
Yeah, I guess so, a little bit. I mean, it's just little New England roads and such, yeah. And that's kind of the part I was from. My family's four or five generations from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, which is sadly famous now. But that's where I am today.
So was that something that was always kind of inspiring, to like be able to kind of disconnect from things and maybe find yourself in nature a little bit?
I agree. Where I grew up is beautiful. You know, the fall, the autumn, it's looking like looking at an oil painting all the time, for sure. But I'm not sure I realized it. So we moved to Florida when I was 13, which I found distinctly not beautiful, at least the parts we lived in. There are beautiful parts to it, but not where we were. But then I think once you go to Colorado, even the first time I brought my mom to Colorado, she was overwhelmed. She was emotional just seeing the mountains. It's really another level. And now I'm not sure I knew how important it was to me, but it is now. I mean, I lived there 15 years ago for 1 year, and I just moved back last year because I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I think slowing down is really important, especially if you have any issues with anxiety or mental health issues or anything. Because at the end of the day, everyone in that town, even the people that have been there for 20 years, have to reckon with how beautiful that mountain is, and that mountain is, and that is, and that is. And I think learning that about myself, I think everyone could learn that about themselves if they spent any real time in a quiet place, in a solid, like a place of solitude. But that just happens to be mine. I think it's been a journey of discovery more than anything.
I'm always kind of interested in place and inspiration, even down to, I don't know if you've experienced this, but there have been certain places, like apartments or houses that I've lived in, where I either felt very inspired just based on the layout of it, or I felt closed off and uninspired just based on like how close are my neighbors, all that stuff.
That for sure. Having people around that aren't the right people, especially how vulnerable I am in my songs and my music, I can't really have people around doing it. And actually, I tend to not write my lyrics until I'm about to record. Like I do it like right when it's the most visceral. But certainly places where there's a lot of people around, it's hard for me. It's why New York's hard for me. I don't write when I'm in New York, really, which is something to consider as I think about moving back there. But then there's certain places that are inspiring for various reasons. But I mean, my whole last LP was about a drag bar in Brooklyn. It's a character study of a bar. But that being said, I didn't write it there. I wrote it in a small, former tavern in upstate New York. So it's like you have to live those things, at least in my case, and then go where I'm going to be quiet enough to write about them and organize your thoughts.
This is why we have writing retreats and things like that, right?
Yeah, and that's good for a lot of people. But even that structured thing, I'm not even sure if I would react well to that. Like it's really, I mean, a lot of what I've done, like my record Sissy or my record Evening at Macri Park, me and my producer of those two records, Dave Drago, he's at 1809 Studios in Macedon, New York. Like we'll pick the form of a song and maybe the melodies, and then I'll write the lyrics right then, and then we'll record within a day of me writing the lyrics. I have the final vocal. And that's how I keep it so visceral. My favorite record is Blonde on Blonde, with Bob Dylan notoriously was writing the lyrics right before they did it and writing the songs, and the whole band just had to wait. And there's something really urgent about that. And that's kind of where I feel like I'm my best version of myself, though.
Tell me about this. You mentioned this vulnerability, and obviously that's very evident in the music. Were you aware of that when you started writing and making music, or was it something that, kind of emerged over time?
I started playing drums when I was 8 or 9. I was semi-professional by 14 or 15. I was playing at clubs, biker honky tonks every weekend. I was always an emotional person, maybe really present in that. But when I started singing in public, I never thought I could sing. I didn't know I could write songs. The first time I sang in public, I was 24, I think, and 25, actually. I don't know, either one. But I always felt like I had to live in it. It just so naturally happened that that's the way that I express myself through songs. And even songwriters, of course, talk about Bob Dylan, like, oh, Bob Dylan's my favorite songwriter. And that may be true, but for me, what he really gave me is listening to him sing, and the way he looked in his eyes, those shark eyes, not caring at all. He's like so serious about it. Even when he's lying to you in his lyrics, he's notoriously like making stuff up constantly, telling half-truths. But the way he's saying it, if you mean it and you're more or less in pitch, like people can't take anything away from you. The more honest you're being with yourself and your expression, nobody else can, you kind of become protected from anyone else who has anything to say about how you do it. And the only thing we really owe anybody is to ourselves, and that's to be as honest as possible. And I happen to be lucky that that happens easy for me in my music, maybe to a fault, I don't know.
Do you sometimes, given that process of kind of writing lyrics relatively close to the recording and then that commitment to singing what you're singing, is part of that process too, do you learn things about yourself? Like, oh, I guess this is what this is really about, or this is what I'm really feeling.
I don't know. I think I spend most of my time in real life trying not to be my full self because it's too much. I'm like a raw nerve all the time. Certainly in like a professional setting, like I can't exist in that level of emotion. It's like a hurricane all the time. And people could get exhausted by that pretty quickly. But then on stage, I can just be myself. And I feel that every time. I mean, Dave Alvin, I heard him say he was a method songwriter. You know, the method actor is a method songwriter. You're like living in it in the moment. That's pretty easy to me because I'm not making anything up ever. These songs are real things that happen usually, even if I'm having taking some license, artistic license on the way I express it. But I don't know. It's not something I've ever had to think about. And as far as learning about myself, occasionally I'll see like, oh, I wrote that and that's what it means. But really, I'm learning about myself in the moment of writing them, and it's just so. It could be so intense sometimes, really emotional to do. I think I learn more about myself in that moment than I do from performing it later, I would say. Yeah, I think because I just tap into it when I'm writing it. I'm not learning as much later, if that makes sense. But maybe I'll find that different. Sometimes what I will do is come to appreciate certain lyrics I wrote later and be like, just on a technical level, wow, that's a good lyric. And then, or then, wow, not so technical maybe, but emotionally, I really got that right. And, you know, I can think about any of my songs, and there's certain lyrics that stick out. And I'm just really proud of it as a songwriter and proud of it as somebody trying to express himself. And then sometimes vocally, oh, I really got that right. Yeah, I guess my only real talent I would consider is like my BS meter is pretty sensitive. I know if I'm lying to myself pretty quickly. So I can avoid that usually.
Obviously, I don't know you, but just from what you're telling me, you have this sensitivity. And that's like a... It's hard in the world to be a sensitive person, right? So was performing, was music, was that somehow a way of finding comfort or insulating yourself from some of the negative things?
I would say it's the opposite of insulating. It is absolutely just broken wide open. I am absolutely vulnerable up there. And that, the only insulation I do is out off stage. Yeah. And it's not what feels good is being able to express how I'm feeling, but not, I'm not trying to protect myself. I do the opposite. I'm trying to go right into the fire.
Does some of that offstage insulation, does that have to do with, because you're so open, people begin having their own feelings and then they want to maybe share or something, and that becomes kind of overwhelming?
Well, that can, but I'm usually better at that. I'm much worse at traffic than I am helping a friend through some really terrible time. Like, only one of those is going to make me like really super anxious, and it's not the friend. Usually it's more that I'm a overwhelming presence in other people's space and lives, because I have no ability to pretend. I have no poker face. That's just not how I'm wired, and it's never been how I'm wired, and I don't know why that is, but it's true.
So it also sounds
as
like
I take an anti-anxiety med.
Yeah.
Which I forgot to take this morning.
that's like the worst feeling. And then you have that moment where you're like, oh, I can probably do without it. No, what am I doing?
I mean, I can. It's just I've become a little bit more unbearable. But yeah, I'm a deeply empathetic person. I do feel things very deeply, and can be exhausting. And, you know, like going through a breakup, for example, it took out months of my life where I was unable to function in any normal way. So that's how it goes. But I can write some good songs. Hopefully, hey, everyone's got their thing. I guess that's going to be mine.
Do you have to be kind of selective about the people you work with in making the music, who's recording it, who's playing on it? They have to have the right energy.
Oh yeah. I really only do things with friends. I mean, on this one, I recorded the vocals for the four bluegrass songs. I recorded them, it was just me one-on-one with my friend Lucas. I recorded the vocals, and my friend Chris Corrado is a Dashboard Confessional. He has a studio in his basement, and I needed a good studio, but it was just me and Lucas, and Chris visited for a second, but very intimate. Vocals are always very intimate because it's going to be very emotional for me. First of all, they have to understand that it's going to be very emotional for me, not be like nervous around it, but embrace it. And if the more people around it, it could get either that I end up starting to perform instead of do the job. Performing isn't the job of recording. You know, and you don't want that. If you're singing a big Frank Sinatra number, yeah, let's get some people in here to watch it. But if you're trying to get to something deep, then it really has to be pretty intimate. And somebody who will push you to get deeper even. So yes.
I'm Jed Bodwin, and you've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Sean Barna. Barna's latest release is the 2024 EP, Internal Trembling. You can learn more at seanbarna.com. That's SEANBARNA.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org and send us questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. www.kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.